If you'd like to listen to our podcasts without ads, please consider becoming a member. In addition to no ads, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows, an invitation to join the DSR Slack community, access to our Discord community, enhanced show notes for select shows, and more. For this week only, get 50% off the first year or the first month of membership. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and use code ECLIPSE to receive the discount. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code ECLIPSE. Thank you very much for your support.
Nine, 12, 10, 28, 2, 23.
This is Deep State Radio, coming to you direct from our super secret studio in the third sub-basement of the Ministry of Snark in Washington, D.C., and from other undisclosed locations across America and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm David Rothkopf. I'm your host. I'm joined today, as I am almost every week, by our friends, Rosa Brooks of Georgetown University Law Center. How are you doing, Rosa?
I'm doing okay, David.
And Edward G. Luce of the Financial Times. How are you doing today, Ed?
Just about surviving, thanks, David.
Just about surviving is excellent. Let's start with Ed's latest handiwork. He had a column today in the Financial Times in which he talked a little bit about Ukraine policy. It's been in the news a bunch this week because there have been some hearings on the Hill in which people have said, we don't provide them with money, they're going to lose and it's going to be bad. There's been a visit by the UK Foreign Minister, David Cameron, to Mar-a-Lago to plead with Donald Trump to lift his hold on Ukraine aid. There's been no progress on this. And there's even been an interview with Vladimir Zelensky in Ukraine from some journalists from Axel Springer Verlag, which owns Politico, in which he called the peace plan of Donald Trump primitive, invited Trump to come and visit Ukraine, but was kind of hedging his bets because, Trump could be the next president of the United States. So what was the approach you took in your column today, Ed?
Thanks for bringing light onto it. The approach was not something that you would disagree with, which is that this is probably the last chance to get American funding for Ukraine before 2025. There's not going to be any activity on the Hill after about June. Mike Johnson's been speaker almost 6 months now, and he's been fainting, spelled F-E-I-N-T-I-N-G, but also probably fainting, F-A-I-N-T-I-N-G, in pretending to support more funding for Ukraine, but not doing what it takes to get that onto the floor. And we know that if it does get onto the floor of the House, there would be a similar result to what you had in the Senate when it passed the $95 billion bill a few weeks ago, in which somewhere between a third and almost a half of Republicans would actually support it. But, of course, those wouldn't include the Republicans who could do Mike Johnson serious harm, and it wouldn't include people who follow Trump's dictate. And Mike Johnson's first priority is to keep on the right side of Trump. And if he can combine that with getting a bit of funding through to Ukraine, then he would. But it's an impossible circle to square. So I have to say, I think this is an extremely critical point. With the Russian spring offensive almost upon us, drone attacks, missile attacks, nightly now on Kharkiv, on Odessa, and other cities, and Kyiv. And Ukraine 10-1 outmatched in most of its artillery. This is a critical moment for Ukraine funding. And given the choice between pleasing Trump or supplying Ukraine, I suspect Mike Johnson is going to please Trump.
Yeah, well, that sounds right to me. What do you think, Rosa?
I unfortunately think Ed is right. Although what Johnson should understand, what everyone in the GOP should understand, is that you can't please Trump. That you don't get credit with Trump. You don't have money in the bank with Trump. That then, when you need something, he sort of says, "Oh, you know, I remember Mike Johnson did me a solid that one time. You know, I'm going to do something for him now." You can give everything away to Trump, and he will keep demanding more. You won't get anything back in exchange. So it's a fool's errand if Johnson thinks he can ingratiate himself with Trump and get some compromise back in return. In some ways, this is fantastically depressing. We saw that the U.S. general in charge of U.S. forces in Europe just warned Congress that we are weeks away from Russia being able to essentially outgun Ukraine by sort of 10-1 in terms of munitions. This is a moment where Ukraine could lose, and it's pretty clear that the MAGA wing of the Republican Party not only doesn't care. And would rather please Trump, but and Ed, I think you made this point in your excellent column in the Financial Times, but the MAGA wing of the Republican Party is, it's not just that they don't care, they're actively pro-Russian and anti-Ukrainian. You know, they're not merely isolationist, they're not merely saying, well, gee whiz, you know, sad about poor Ukraine, too bad about the Russians, they're awful, but we've got, you know, we have to worry about problems here at home. You know, that they're actively hoping that Putin prevails. They're perfectly happy with that. And I think, it's crystal clear that if Trump does become president, he will essentially cede everything to Vladimir Putin, you know, and the precedent that will set, not only in terms of the devastating consequences for Ukrainians, but for other European countries, and indeed for the world, is just unbelievable.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's a little unfair to put you guys in this position, but I have a column that's coming out in a few hours, and in it I talk about this issue also. But I take a slightly different perspective, because although I try to just sort of imitate what Ed does, I like to mix it up a little bit. And the perspective that I'm taking is that Donald Trump has ended the primary phase of the campaign and is into the general election phase of the campaign, and is therefore trying to kind of triangulate his positions on issues so that he can win. And that's really the only thing that matters to him. He doesn't really care about anything. He just wants to win, because otherwise he's going to jail. And I offer two examples of this in the article. One example of this is he was interviewed by some Israeli journalist from a right-wing Israeli newspaper that was owned by a big Republican donor, who were there to get his, you know, rah-rah support for Netanyahu. And he said, "You've got to clean this thing up." Now, as it happens, you know, end this war. As it happens, he said this exactly at the same time as a poll came out showing the majority of the American people don't support the Israeli position anymore. And it is clear to me that Trump, reading the tea leaves, is going, "I can't go too far in support of the extreme Israeli position, or it's going to be a loser for me politically." The other more recent and more egregious example of this has to do with abortion, where Trump had a conversation with some journalists in which he said he doesn't support a national ban on abortion. It should be left to the states. And so he was trying to distance himself from the most extreme position of the Republican Party.
Chris, he said he'd leave it to the states, but then when the Arizona Supreme Court decided that they would uphold a mid-19th century law making abortion, criminalizing abortion, he sort of said, "Well, maybe they've gone a little too far."
Well, that's exactly my point. And in fact, I mentioned that in the article, which is that, you know, the next day, the day after he said this, Arizona reached this decision and supported this 1864 law. And then today, the day we're recording this, Trump said, yeah, they've gone too far. In other words, Trump's trying to distance himself from Roe v. Wade's overturn, which he's also trying to get credit for. Why? He's trying to triangulate. You know, what does it reveal? It reveals he doesn't believe in anything. So what does this have to do with Ukraine? Well, it seems to me with Ukraine, the calculation that, you know, Trump's going to make isn't going to be based on the well-being of Ukraine or NATO. He doesn't care about any of those things. The only way Trump's going to be persuaded to move on this issue is if he thinks the loss that we're talking about, the big reversals for Ukraine in this summer, could reflect on him. And all of a sudden, he and MAGA and Mike Johnson could be blamed for a giant foreign policy disaster right in the middle of the election. Because if that is not communicated to him, that that's important, you know, he's not going to move off the issue. Of course, there is a counter calculus here. And the counter calculus is changing his position on Ukraine worth pissing off the Russians, who he's also counting on to help him win the election? But at the moment, I don't think he believes anything. I think it's all just what's going to get me where I need to go in order to avoid being in jail. What do you think, Ed?
No, I think you're absolutely right that he's a nihilist. He's about himself and whatever it takes to win. And that's key to his survival, to getting rid of the legal cases, to staying out of prison. And he'll do what it takes. You know, and if that involved, you know, endorsing single payer health care, or, declaring the abolition of the Pentagon or something, he'd do it. He'd do whatever it takes.
Picking Barack Obama as his running mate. That's what I.
Yeah, absolutely. Or even Michelle Obama, you know. But on the other hand, he would choose Marjorie Taylor Greene as his running mate if he thought that would help him. Look, I think he's got a little bit more of a bias than that, and that you might be imputing a little bit too much, you know, persuasive skills there to David Cameron on his.
There's no evidence that Cameron was persuasive at all with Trump.
None, you know. I mean, he's not got a history of being very persuasive, to put it mildly. But I guess, you know, I can understand why he, as the saying goes, you know, took fruits to the volcano down there in Mar-a-Lago and paid obeisance to Trump, and a bit of flattery and attention, you know, never harms your ability to get Trump to maybe pivot a little bit. And Mike Johnson is going to be going down to Mar-a-Lago on Friday of this week to do a joint press conference about election integrity. I mean, that's an Orwellian prospect, if ever I heard of one. So let's see what emerges from that meeting with Trump. Johnson, incidentally, also had a 70-minute meeting with Marjorie Taylor Greene, his potential nemesis, today, Wednesday, that is. And she, of course, you know, is threatening to be the one vote that would challenge his speakership. I don't know where that gets us this time next week. But I do suspect, in spite of agreeing with everything that you've just said about Trump, David, I do suspect that his inclination towards Putin, the strong inclination of his vast echo chamber, the Tucker Carlsons, etc., and the Steve Bannons, of his lieutenants, of his amplifiers towards Putin, for whom it is much more intrinsic, a belief system that we have something in common between MAGA and Putin. I think they will keep Trump honest in their terms of honest, in the same way that Trump can't boast about his vaccine accomplishment because the base won't take it. I doubt he could pivot very far on Ukraine because the base are just pretty deeply baked by now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that may be true, and I certainly don't suggest that it's going to work. I'm just suggesting that, you know, moving off of abortion is about as central as it gets. and he's wiggling. You know, he's trying to wiggle on it. So it's clear, or moving off of Israel for that matter. And he's definitely showing that he's feeling the pressures of the campaign. What do you think, Rosa?
Wiggling is right. I mean, you could interpret Trump saying that Israel needs to, you know, finish the job or whatever his phrasing was in a variety of ways. You could interpret that as in part saying, hey, there are political costs of this brutal conflict to you. And therefore, you need to find some reasonable resolution to it. Or you could interpret that in a much more menacing way of, you know, do whatever you have to do, just make it fast. Make it fast, but I don't care how you do it. And I think, unfortunately, Donald Trump being Donald Trump, it's probably the latter, not the former. But fundamentally, of course, you're right, David. Trump has no ideology. You know, he has no ideology. He has a desire to enrich himself, and he has a desire to stay out of prison, and he has a desire to be powerful and famous, and a desire to belittle others. And those are kind of those are his, you know, the guiding forces of his life. And at any given moment, that can sometimes lead him to say something that is a little bit more to the left or a little bit more to the right. But I think Ed is absolutely correct that at this point, I mean, it's really fascinating. I mean, if I were looking at this solely from an anthropological perspective and didn't actually have to say live in this country, I would find it, you know, entirely fascinating that Trump both created the MAGA movement and in some ways is now, which he controls in some powerful ways, but increasingly he's also controlled by it. You know, he's created something that now he can't put that completely back in the box, even if he wants to. And just watching that phenomena is astonishing, right? I mean, it's an astonishing series of lessons in the political Frankenstein's monsters being created. I don't think we're suddenly going to see Donald Trump saying, gee, I wish to reach an olive branch out to all those Democrats and moderates in the nation by staking out a middle ground on any issue, Ukraine, abortion, Gaza and Israel. I think he'll say outrageous things. He'll occasionally contradict himself because that's what he does. And that's Donald Trump.
Yeah, no, I sort of agree that's the direction that we're heading. I think he's showing some signs that the election is having an impact on his rhetoric, but he always thinks he's smarter than we are. So he always thinks he can say something that's gonna, you know, fix things. His whole theory of life has been that he can talk his way out of any mess he's gotten himself into, and I think that's what he's certainly trying to do here. Although, you know, the other side of the coin is, Rosa, that he, you know, he'll threaten his way out of it, as there was an article in the New York Times today in which he seems to be suggesting that if people don't support him, donors don't support him, they're going to pay a price for that.
Yeah, I mean, that's his MO. He cut his teeth in New York and New Jersey real estate sectors. A tremendous amount of mob control at the time. You know, he obviously was up to his neck in all sorts of really corrupt mob politics. And that's his MO, is essentially to see if he can set up protection rackets, you know, support me or else. Support me and I'll protect you. Don't support me and I will be the thing against which you need protection and you won't be able to get it. And I think we've seen his MO over the course of the last, 10 years or so, has been a complete willingness to lash out at and an attempt to sic vigilante and MAGA activists against people. And no one is too large or small for his attention. It doesn't matter if they're his own former chief of staff, his own former secretary of defense, his own former chairman of the Joint Chiefs, or if there's some, you know, high school kid somewhere whose tweet somehow caught his attention or whatever, you know, that he has no hesitation about going after people. And he has been crystal clear. You know, he said repeatedly, I will I will go after those who have wronged me. And he said that repeatedly, he said it in a variety of ways. And I think we can expect him to make good on that. And it's very chilling. You know, it's very much what an autocrat does. You know, raise the costs of any dissent or disagreement, whether it's small or large, so much that so much that people say, well, gee, I could oppose him, but the price I will pay will be too high. You know, I could be bankrupted. I could be in physical jeopardy. I could have my reputation ruined. So better to just kind of go along with him. And I think that the interesting, this was an article this morning, David, that you mentioned, by Tom Edsel in the New York Times, talking about the degree to which, after years of threatening, you know, election officials, judges, jurors, law clerks, you name it, now even large Republican donors who don't support Donald Trump are succumbing to the pressure to give him money anyway, not in the traditional way of, well, let's just make sure that we're hedging all of our bets by throwing some cash in every possible direction, but because they fear that Trump's nose for revenge will lead him to use the tools of the executive branch to go after them, using things like the IRS audits and so forth, to harass and persecute those who he not only those he sees as his actual enemies who crossed him, but simply those who didn't support him enough. And so it's now not just a kind of bet hedging in the standard way, but real fear, a sense of, boy, if I don't support this guy with cash and he becomes president, he will come after me and the very money that I, you know, he wanted me to use to support him would be placed in jeopardy. It's incredibly chilling.
Really is that. I mean, what we got here is, you know, the way it works in Russia. It's, you know, the way it works in autocracies around the world where, leaders use every tool at their disposal to get the loyalty and the outcomes they want.
Yeah, it is. And we have, for the most part, you know, people who are prepared to pay obeisance in advance to him. I mean, you know, autocracies, democracies might die in darkness, but, you know, autocracies survive, they thrive on acquiescence. You know, not on you know, necessarily overt support. Just acquiescence is all they need. A little bit of spinelessness. There was, I mean, this is unrelated to the donor point that Rosa was making, but it sort of keys into the larger character point about this election and the Trump threat. The Gerald R. Ford Foundation. Politico reported, you know, her three times the board had rejected giving its annual Courage Award. I think it was Courage Award to Liz Cheney. Three times because they feared offending Trump. Now, this is the Gerald Ford Foundation. You know, this isn't the Donald Trump Foundation. This is the president who replaced Nixon. It's an independent presidential body. Liz Cheney is on the board. Her father was chief of staff for Gerald Ford. She's clearly been courageous in terms of standing up to her own party in the last couple of years. Three times they voted it down for fear of offending Trump. And I believe somebody pointed out to me, Tim Snyder, the Yale professor, calls this obedience in advance. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of that from the business community. We saw that from Jamie Dimon of JP Morgan at the Davos gathering in January, talking about, well, you know, Trump's not so bad. You know, people always exaggerate about these things. Well, there is that. There is the sort of taking out insurance against Trump becoming president or worse, essentially bribing him in advance. So that there are some favors there on his brain if he does become president, but then there's just the sort of the fear, the deep fear of somebody strong, and it's amazing what share of the population will put their heads below the parapet at the first shadow of that fear, and then finally there's tax cuts. You know, big business does like tax cuts, and Trump will give them more. and tax cuts. I don't think there's anything that would matter more than tax cuts for business. And we've seen this proved time and time again. I don't think, you know, the well-being of some of these people's families matter as much as tax cuts, let alone the health of U.S. democracy.
Yeah, tax cuts in all their forms. One of the forms is regulatory cuts, because, you know, cutting regulations brings more money to the bottom line for big companies as well. That's going to manifest itself in several ways. Not just should Trump be president, but there is, of course, a big case in the Supreme Court right now, which may reduce the government's ability to actually create or enforce those regulations. And the Trumpist judges may provide this as a kind of early incentive prior to the election for people to support them. This is the point of the show where we say to everybody who's not a member, hey, you should be a member. Then you could listen to the whole show, just like all the other shows that are here on the DSR network. And we hope you will do that. It's not that much money. It's just slightly more than the cost of a cup of coffee a month. And then when you do it, you get to listen to 33% more podcasts on each and every podcast. But for now, for those of you who are not members, we say bye-bye. And for those of you who are members, we say stand by.